Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thank you for watching. This is the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. First, Ghislaine Maxwell wants her case dismissed. Wait till you hear why. Second, Massimo Giannulli's request to go home has been denied. Third, that pharmacist who ruined all those vaccinations, pleading guilty. Fourth, why we can't have heroes. Fifth, a manhunt for a 70-year-old in Tennessee. A political corruption update. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for taking the time to watch our show. If you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you please hit that subscribe button and then hit that little bell so that you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. Hope you all enjoyed our live program last night, as well as our Patreon program that we did immediately after that. I certainly enjoyed both. Now, let's get straight to the docket. Ghislaine Maxwell, she is asking the judge to dismiss her case. Why, you may say? Is it because she's innocent? Is it because she just doesn't deserve to be in prison because she is special? No, it's because she's saying that when that guy named Jeff pled guilty back in Florida years ago, that no one else was going to be charged, that agreement covered Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, the U.S. Attorney's Office says we weren't bound by that agreement with that guy named Jeff when it lodged sex trafficking charges against him back in July of 2019, saying the agreement covered only Southern Florida and didn't cover that guy named Jeff's accomplices. Now, that guy named Jeff, his attorney, was going to invoke that agreement as his defense, but unfortunately, he had that little mishap in that jail cell in Manhattan, and the case is now dismissed. Now, a lot of people think that agreement must be valid because they're asking the court to invalidate it so that other people associated with that guy named Jeff can, in fact, be prosecuted. The other reason why Ghislaine Maxwell is asking that her case be dismissed is that the grand jury did not have enough Black or Hispanic grand juror members on it, and therefore she is raising the claim that there was not a fair cross-section of her community in the grand jury that obviously issued the indictment against her. Now, Ghislaine Maxwell is neither Black nor Hispanic, but she's simply raising the issue to preserve it for appellate purposes. Don't think that one's going to get a whole lot of play at all. They're probably going to have a hearing as it relates to breadth of the agreement with that guy named Jeff and whether all United States Attorney's offices are bound by that or whether it was only the Southern District in Florida. That one may actually get rather interesting. All right. Remember Massimo Giannulli? That's right. He's been serving that jail sentence because of his involvement with the college admission scandal. He says, hey, I'm 57 years old. I spent 56 days in quarantine. I need to go home. So he asked the judge for COVID-19 relief so that he could serve it on in-home detention. Guess what? The court said denied. I was actually looking at the stats as it relates to compassionate release. Under various provisions that were put into law under the COVID-19 Relief Act, we have filed a few of these COVID-19 relief petitions with the court. Every single one of them has been denied. We started to think that maybe we weren't very good at what we were doing. And then we found out only four have been granted across the country. So apparently COVID-19 is not a factor that any of the courts are taking necessarily into consideration when making their decisions to grant early compassionate release. Massimo Giannulli has a little more time before he can go home and be reunited with his wife, Lori Loughlin. Remember that Wisconsin pharmacist who was arrested and charged with state charges regarding tampering with the COVID-19 vaccine? Well, guess what? He still has those state charges, but those were only misdemeanors. Turns out that the pharmacist, Stephen Brandenburg, who is alleged to have allegedly left more than 500 doses out of the refrigerator where they were being stored at the medical center where he was working. Turns out the feds are going to file charges on him. And guess what? He has already agreed to plead guilty. There's two counts of attempting to tamper with a consumer product, and he is going to now face federal prison time based upon his conduct. Mr. Brandenburg did tell the police when he was questioned that he did not believe that the vaccine was going to be effective in any way, and that he was really going through a tough time. Apparently, a judge had suspended his custody and visitation with his children, and he was going through an ugly divorce, whereupon he decided to completely destroy his life by committing a crime and now more than likely going to be a convicted felon. Needless to say, the pharmacy board has revoked his license to dispense controlled substances. Unfortunate situation. If people do not believe that bad things will never happen to them, this is a textbook example of it. I have seen it over the years where literally people's lives are, for the lack of a better term, great, and their whole world can come tumbling down rather quickly. Never say that'll never happen to me. Next on the docket, why we can't have heroes. Why? Maybe I'm a little too cynical, but heroes always disappoint. Now, Joshua Cullen, a Polk County fire rescue paramedic who had previously been awarded the Paramedic of the Year. That's right. He's been charged with theft of COVID-19 vaccines. Can you believe it? It is alleged that Mr. Cullen was arrested after he allegedly forged vaccine screenings and consent forms to cover up what he claimed was a supervisor's theft of doses of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. He's been charged with 4 counts of forgery, 4 counts of uttering a forged instrument, 4 counts of falsifying medical records, 2 counts of creating a fictional personal ID, as well as criminal use of personal ID and official misconduct, according to charging documents. The investigation is ongoing, including what role the supervisor has in the theft of the vaccines and the creation of the fraudulent and forged medical records. According to police reports, Cullen received 3 vials of the COVID-19 vaccine on January 6th, and he was instructed to give it to the Polk County firefighters the same day. Cullen later reported that he administered 28 vaccines and 2 were disposed of before he retracted his report and said that he had actually administered 27 vaccines and 3 were waste. After a request, Cullen only provided 21 completed vaccines, screenings, and consent forms and a log, but the log contained 23 vaccine receipts, meaning 2 forms were missing. Cullen told officials he would get the missing information that was needed before he later reported the names of firefighters he said were recipients of the vaccine. When contacted during the investigation, the 2 firefighters said they never received their doses. The 3rd name provided by Cullen belonged to a person who did not exist. Cullen ultimately admitted that he had created and signed the 3 forms himself, and he claimed to deputies that a supervisor joked with him about storing some of the vaccines for the supervisor's mother. He claimed that the supervisor instructed him to report the missing vaccines as waste. Now, according to Cullen, he refused to provide those vaccines to the supervisor, at which time the supervisor said he would tell those higher up in the chain of command that Cullen was selling vaccines outside of work. Cullen claimed that he later noticed 3 vaccines were missing after returning from a lunch break. Cullen was then advised that he did not question his supervisors in reference to the missing vaccine. However, he immediately became suspicious. Guess what? I am suspicious. We'll see how things turn out there for former Paramedic of the Year, Cullen, and whether his supervisor will be charged as well. Just goes to show, you never know who is going to cross the line. Next on the docket, a manhunt for a 70-year-old man in Tennessee. It is alleged that the Tennessee authorities are searching for a 70-year-old man accused of shooting and killing two duck hunters. The duck hunters, Chance Black, who is 26, and Zachary Grooms, 25, were at the Real Foot Lake in northwest Tennessee on Monday morning when the suspect, David Vowell, approached them. Apparently, an argument broke out. Not exactly sure what it was about, maybe who should be in the duck blind. Needless to say, it is alleged that Mr. Vowell shot and killed both men. Vowell then fled on foot. His boat was recovered along with the car that he drove to the boat ramp has also been seized. The manhunt apparently was complicated by a large rainstorm which caused the lake to rise into the low-lying areas, and the hunt continues. Mr. Vowell of Martin, Tennessee is considered armed and dangerous. I've always said neighbor disputes are the worst. I've never considered duck blind disputes to be even more dangerous than neighbor disputes, but you can't make this stuff up. Next, a quick recess before we continue with the docket. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, back to the docket. A political corruption update. Remember Sheldon Silver? We talked about him over the last couple of years. He is now the former New York Assembly Speaker. He's now serving a 6.5-year prison sentence for corruption. At his sentencing, the court told him that he was going to prison. He asked that, could I stay out of custody while my appeal to the appellate courts all the way up to the Supreme Court would be heard? And the judge says, no, this is a case about pure political corruption. You have to go to prison. The other day, the Supreme Court denied the request of Mr. Silver to take his case to the United States Supreme Court. Mr. Silver was convicted after the first trial was reversed on appeal, engaging in a scheme that involved trading business between two real estate developers and a law firm. Silver supported legislation that benefited the developers, and then the developers then referred certain tax business to the law firm that paid Silver various fees. I think we refer to that in the modern sense of the word. Oh, that's right. It's called money laundering. One could say politics is really nothing more than money laundering. How do we get the money to the public officials so that it doesn't look like we're buying and paying for the public officials? Needless to say, Mr. Sheldon Silver, who was one of the most powerful politicians in New York, ultimately went down. He will serve his remainder of his 6.5-year sentence in federal prison and not going to receive any relief from the United States Supreme Court. Now, for those of you keeping score at home, that's right, Mr. Silver was a Democrat. But because we are equal opportunists when it comes to political corruption, let's talk about former House Speaker Larry Householder, a Republican. Guess what? You know, he's been charged with that big scheme in Ohio by federal authorities regarding a money laundering scheme to get some legislation passed through so that the nuclear power company could get the relief that they wanted, i.e. a bailout by the taxpayers. It is alleged that Mr. Householder coordinated that effort while funneling money to various organizations to get it to the right people without making it look like it was coming from the wrong people. Well, guess what? Thank goodness. And this is what you got to love about America. Where else can a corrupt public official, allegedly, use his campaign fund, that's right, donations from his constituents for his legal fees? God bless America. Thank goodness Mr. Householder had those monies available to him. In fact, guess what? He has spent nearly $950,000 from his campaign fund to pay for legal fees. Nearly all of that money, $920,000 of it, went to two law firms that are aiding in his legal criminal defense. Now, those are some really good retainers. Go forth and do great things, attorneys. Hopefully, you're going to earn it all, because I doubt Mr. Householder would be giving it back to any of his constituents who donated to him. Now, Mr. Householder may have some issues, because apparently there are some ethics opinions in Ohio that basically says that it is improper to use campaign expenditures for personal use. That's a misdemeanor, and it carries a $1,000 penalty. I guess Mr. Householder is less concerned about the misdemeanor and $1,000 fine for ethics violations for using campaign funds when he needs it to fight off a federal indictment, which could more than likely result in him spending the remainder of his adult life in prison. Obviously, we'll give Mr. Householder the presumption of innocence, and I hope those attorneys earn every penny of that $950,000. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet our contestant, Mr. Alexander Janky. Now get this. Mr. Janky apparently goes to a house, whereupon he goes to a shed. When he is at the shed, he takes things of value that are not his. For example, he took a motorcycle helmet, some wire, a fishing toolbox, and some other belongings. He then put the items from the shed that he did not have permission to take and put them in the car. Mr. Janky gets stuck. His car gets stuck, apparently, in the driveway. And based upon Mr. Janky's booking photo, it looks like it was in the mud. The Good Samaritan homeowner, that not knowing he had been robbed, comes out to try to help Mr. Janky get the car out of the mud. Whereupon the homeowner realizes, hey, is that my motorcycle helmet? Hey, is that my fishing tackle box? That's right. Ultimately calls the police. Mr. Janky is arrested for burglary and, oh yes, that's right, motor vehicle theft, because the car was stolen too. Mr. Alexander Janky, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. I can feel if you win this prize of dumb criminal contestant of the week, your luck is going to be turning around. Pretty soon, you won't have to be taking other people's things without their permission. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.